Pisces, and welcome to Every Decision You Make, your 2021 into 22 astrology studio. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so, here with some information from your chart at this most interesting time in your life and in astrological history. The general theme of this reading is going to be about decisions, so I will do my best to bring things back to that topic and that general direction. Each time I address another sort of matter or sector of the chart, I am working with, let's see here, I'm working with a couple of different charts. One is a kind of a sketch plan of the planets generally in their current positions. And we're starting at 3:33 p.m. on Friday, the 19th of February, with the moon newly in Gemini and just having passed the first quarter moon, with the sun newly in Pisces, and all that Aquarius stuff, at least here in the Northeast, is setting exactly at the moment that I write. And one of the intriguing qualities of this moment is that we are really just a little more than a day ahead of Mercury stationing direct, and it is snowing outside. One of the reasons why Mercury stationing direct, by the way, Mercury retrogrades in general, just jumping right into that topic, are so meaningful to Pisces, and really to all the mutable signs, but especially Pisces and Sag, is that we are as sensitive to our opposite sign and the, you might say, activities of that sign's ruler, ruling planet, using the traditional word, as we are to our own planets. And that's because the opposite sign, first of all, is part of our sign. So as Patrick Walker once said, if you scratch a Pisces, you find a Virgo. Patrick Walker had the funniest one-liners in his column, and I'm sad that I only have a couple of hundred of them saved, because it was I learned astrology reading a horoscope, and so that's one of his funnier lines, I think. And it is true that if you scratch a Pisces, you find a Virgo. And right now, you know, Pisces and Virgo are kind of rubbing up against one another, and the reason for that is that Mercury is stationing direct, and it's doing so in a conjunction to the ruling planet of Pisces, which is Jupiter. And they're going to form another conjunction soon during your solar return season. So we'll work with that conjunction. That's a good one. But the retrogrades of Mercury affect you because they affect your partners and the concept of partnership so much. And so it's good to watch those and to study the ways in which your experiences of relationship shift, and where information is revealed, and where, you know, you may have to work through some frustration and some difficulty in communication, and around the time of Mercury retrograde in particular, the days surrounding the station, which in our case is, you know, around the 18th through around the 21st, and then whenever it began a couple of weeks ago. Okay, so let's first talk about the major prevailing long-term condition of Pisces. The thing that is really thing one, I always make promises of what I'm going to link to the page, and this one is going to be my article about Neptune. The last thing I wrote before I kind of got sucked down the COVID vortex and was writing a couple of really beautiful, pure astrology articles way back at the beginning of 2020. Neptune is the, it's said to be the, you know, the modern ruling planet of Pisces. So we can take that as a working premise. It's certainly very Piscean, Neptune, and Neptune is the lord of rivers, oceans, and earthquakes. Interesting that earthquakes gets tossed in. You don't really hear that mentioned very often. But in contemporary psychological astrology, Neptune has a few very distinctive qualities, one of which is disappearing. A lot of them just begin with the letter D. And this thing about disappearing can create a sense of distance or a form of alienation if Neptune is very powerful in your chart at that moment, at that time frame in history. And it is now. Neptune is in Pisces. Maybe those of you who are old-time astrology fans recognize the the significance of that, and remember the trek of Neptune across Aquarius, which ends around 2012, went on for about 12 years and ends in 2012, and that was a very distinctive time. And now Neptune in Pisces, in your sign or rising sign or near your moon, is a very distinctive time in history. And that is because it is infusing everything in your life and in your world and in everybody else's world, but you're a little bit better equipped to handle it, with these odd properties of like confusion and not understanding what's actually happening and where things are going and what is true. You know, Neptune is about delusion and deception and denial, three more D words, and it is not always easy to tell what is true when Neptune is very active in one's chart, and it most assuredly is very active in your chart right now, because one way or the other, it's either near your sun, near your moon, or in your first house. With Pisces rising, I would count all of Pisces as the first house, and so it can really make things seem like they are just not on solid ground. Like there's just no getting out of this kind of astral, psychic kind of quicksand. Mixing some metaphors there. And the result can be frustration, alienation, people feeling like people are fucking nuts. Neptune... Debbie Kempton Smith said, if you want to find out if someone's a whack job, the more damage done to Neptune in the chart, like a lot of harsh angles to it, or placed in an inopportune place, that's how you tell people have a hard time keeping a grip on reality, because it brings in the delusion, deception, denial end of Neptune, as opposed to the dreams and inspiration and music and end of Neptune. And it is challenging. And the lunar nodes, the main point being here, that Neptune is in a 90-degree angle to the lunar nodes. It's not exact anymore. It's slowly separating. As of today, it's about 3 degrees separate. But there's planets around the lunar nodes. For example, Juno is on the south node. Vesta is square of the nodes. But the main thing going on is that the nodes and Neptune are in a square. And what the nodes do, the lunar nodes, is they tend to magnify things. They tend to get in the membrane, in the dividing line between public and private. They tend to have an eclipse-like quality, right? Because the nude nodes, tell you where approximately an eclipse is going to happen. When the sun, like it is now, is approximately square of the nodes, you know that you're about halfway between eclipses. And we're about to have a new moon with the sun and the moon in a pretty close conjunction to Neptune. So there's a lot of Neptune right now, and it makes it difficult to figure out which way is up. And if people, someone already has a problem knowing which way is up, this can be very confusing. And the very confusing, like really disorienting to the to the point where someone can be kind of like detached from reality, another D word, and not know it, right? That's the problem with being detached from reality, is that usually people don't know it. And this square between Neptune and the nodes has gone on for quite a while. It's really been in force and effect for about 8 or 9 months, and is the source of a lot of this, I don't know, what's true? Is anything true? If I think it, it's true. That's the dangerous one. And it's not usually the one acknowledged. If I think it, it's true. So you're living with this condition enhanced because Pisces is an important sign. Neptune is in Pisces. And then the nodes are making an angle across what across the fourth house, 10th house axis, which is kind of like the family corporation, you know, the corpus body of the family in the fourth house and lineages and the tribe, and then the 10th house kind of corporate body representing leadership and responsibility. And you, by the way, have Sagittarius as your 10th sign, 10th place, 10th sign, 10th house, all the same thing. It's like tarot cards, doesn't matter, you know, which deck you use, or, you know, the layout is the same. And this is pulling you to increase your involvement in the world in a leadership-oriented way. However, with Neptune, it's very hard to have any sense of any tangible reality. Right, that's really tricky, to have a sense of tangible reality, because the thing about Neptune is that it defies all the concepts of tangible reality. So the thing to know is that you're driving in a fog, and when you're driving in a fog, you've got to do certain things. You've got to slow down. You've got to keep your low beams on, preferably if you have fog lights lighting up from beneath, right? Because if you spray too much light in the fog, it bounces around, and then you can't see anything. And you drive like you're in a fog, and you make sure that you relax, that you're paying attention, that you're using your intuition, that you stop if you need to, and you go as slowly as you need to, and then you're fine, and then the fog will clear, and that is about where you are today. And so when I talk about the power of decision, and the power of decision being the basis of your freedom, right? Freedom ultimately means the freedom to decide, to choose what you want. Now, there's a secondary expression of that, which is you then do that thing. But without the freedom to choose, without the freedom to decide, what exactly have you got? How do you see your options? How do you live in a way that is defined around your preferences and values? And you do need to know what they are. We're going to get there in a moment. So that's going on in the background. And one of my first astrology teachers, I had a few people early on who whose names I don't mention that often. They're not well-known people. One of them was a guy named David Arner. And I remember an astrology lesson where he said, you've got to take all the things that Neptune represents and write them on the wall, because you will forget them. So you make a mnemonic device, D: dreams, drugs, delusion, denial, drink, drama, deception, delusion, denial, and so forth, detachment. And then Neptune has itself got the property of disappearing. If you go on the Wikipedia page for Neptune, and this is not any kind of endorsement of Wikipedia, but if I recall, that article is pretty good, and read the pre-discovery history of Neptune, even the great Galileo Galilei saw Neptune and saw it move and recorded the movement in his notebook. Any scientist keeps a good lab notebook, and Galileo did, and didn't recognize that it was a planet orbiting the sun beyond Saturn. Even Galileo couldn't put that together. And then it disappears for a while, then somebody finds it, then it disappears again. And it's sometime around 1846 that it stops disappearing, And then someone's like, oh, there it is. And they get credit for the discovery. And the rest are pre-discovery. But it's so humorous the way that it acts in the pre-discovery phase exactly like it acts in life. You know it's there 1 minute. You forget that it's there the next minute. I have had Neptune disappear from the chart so many times. Like, I'm looking at it, I'm looking right at the chart, working with the client. I'm like, where's Neptune in this chart? Where I'm scanning around the wheel, you know, just reading around the circle, and I miss it, and I miss it, and I miss it. I had once, it started raining, and a raindrop fell on Neptune, like the first raindrop, and smeared the ink in the inkjet printing chart. I think I was in Germany. So Neptune is very Neptunian, and I'm kind of lingering on the topic a little bit because you just have to keep reminding yourself that if you want to know why things are kind of the way they are, well, consider that Neptune is involved. Now, this story develops, and it develops in a couple of different ways. As you may know from my work in this type of astrology work, I consider the most important houses to be one's own house. In this case, Pisces, one sign, and then the immediately previous sign, Aquarius, and then the immediate next sign, Aries. And you can do a fantastic reading just by reading houses 12, 1, and 2, because that tells you almost everything that you need to know. So let's check out house 12 and house 2 and see if we can keep remembering, keep remembering that that Neptune is in Pisces and creating this distortion, right? There's another D word, a distortion where it's almost like it's almost like dark matter in a way. Like you know that it's there because you're measuring it and it's there by inference, but you forget what it is and it disappears. So 12th house has a similar property. Speaking of disappearing, the 12th house, the house before any other house, right? So in the case of, studying Pisces, Aquarius is going to be the 12th house or place. The words mean the same thing. I like to use the word place better. So the 12th place of Pisces is Aquarius. And that is uber interesting because in many ways, the 12th house can reveal the true nature of the person. It's the hidden nature. It's the thing. It's the thing below. It's the thing below normal waking consciousness that actually is more like normal waking consciousness from the inside of the person. And we could play off of Patrick Walker and say, you know, scratch a Pisces, and you find an Aquarius also. And the 12th has all of these Neptune-Pisces kind of properties of things disappearing into them. I like to jokingly think of it as the house of lost socks and Bic lighters and, you know, pens and guitar picks. And you have got, and people and places, right? And, you know, the missing people in a person's life also kind of get swept in with the pens and guitar picks. Because you find them, you know, people with the sun in the 12th can have a somehow missing, detached, distant father. Moon in the 12th can have a distant, detached mother. Women with the moon in the 12th tend to get defensive when I say that. If they're women whose children have the moon in the 12th, can get defensive to the point where I really stopped talking about it for a while because it was just needlessly pissing people off. But I'm going to bring the subject back. Whatever you see in the 12th house of your chart or any chart can seem like it's gone missing. Really, it's deeply internalized, but it can describe parents and friends and things like this. Now, in the condition of the planets right now, and as we're approaching, through the year, the general trend right now is things moving from Capricorn to Aquarius and then Aquarius to Pisces. And so a lot of stuff is going to pass through your 12th house. And at the moment, and particularly at the moment of the new moon on March 13th, the ensemble consists of Saturn, Jupiter, Mercury, and Damocles. And so that's a lot to have in the 12th house. And it is indicative of the most introversion. It doesn't mean that you're not going to express yourself, but it really is tucking your insight into yourself and giving you something that is very rare for the world right now, which is access to an inner life. Now, you may have heard some of my talks about the effect of electrical media, radio, television, telephone, and in particular the internet, has a way of eviscerating the inner life and creating a sensation of a world where people feel that they have no privacy. There is, or they don't even feel this way. It's a Neptune thing. They don't notice, they don't realize that they have given up the whole concept of privacy, and it feels good, sort of, until you realize how much you need it and you need some time to yourself and time and space to yourself, and you decide one day you don't want everyone knowing everything about you. You decide one day that your plate of sushi is for you and you alone to look out. You don't need to gram your dinner. And so when we tuck all these planets into Aquarius, which has been going on since mid-December, well, actually, you know, it starts last March with Saturn dipping in for a couple of months and then going back into Capricorn and then back into Aquarius. The trend since last year has been planets leaving Capricorn and entering Aquarius. And that for you is the general, gradual, continual feeling of having some interior reality and needing to make contact with your interior reality. You need privacy right now. You need seclusion right now. And I you know, if you're someone who is partnered or lives with a family, I think it's quite important that you respond to this in some way. You may remain partnered, you may remain in a live-in relationship, but in the context of that partnership or live-in relationship or family situation or housemate situation, you have to have space and time for yourself. You have to have that opportunity to be alone with your thoughts and to reflect. Now, the paradox here is that while you're doing that, and while you're like making sure that your house has a roof, and that you have some seclusion and coverage and that your doors work. This is a very important thing with Neptune in the first. By the way, quick public service message for making sure that your passwords have been changed recently and that you are up on your security protocols for everything from your front door to windows that don't lock to bank account passwords to making sure you've got a long enough passcode on your mobile device, Neptune in the first house can create these boundary breaches. Okay, so that said, and they can be worked on, they can be fixed. And I do recommend calling the locksmith or the handyman or getting your friend over who knows how to fix all the latches and doors in your house that don't lock properly. It's very important to do this. And I have found somewhat humorously that I could call Neptune in the first house the, fix your lock placement, fix your freaking doorknob so that it actually latches and the bathroom door doesn't drift open. So while this is going on, these planets are moving into this distinctly private area in your chart, the 12th house, where there's all of this other material, hidden material, ancestral material, things from the past, lost people, lost places, lost memories and history and boxes of letters, and it's like the kind of attic of your life in there. And there's a lot of people in there, a lot of people in there. And now with planets in there, where before there was very little, suddenly there was Jupiter-Saturn conjunction happening on December 21st for the first time since 1405, your reality is being called inward. And if you honor that, you might find that your expressive power magnifies greatly because the 12th has this weird contradiction to it where their people are very private and then at the same time they can be very public. Madonna is a great example of this. Madonna has this monstrously powerful 12th house chart. The 10th house is supposed to be the house of fame. It's hard to get more famous than Madonna, particularly in her day. She was just like the Beatles of her day, the Elton John of her day. There was no denying everybody knew her name in Botswana and Eskimos and so forth. But no doubt this is a private, inwardly seeking person. Okay, like everybody with a strong 12th, but that can kind of broadcast itself outward into a larger-than-life feeling. You may or may not want that. You don't have to work for it. You don't have to do anything to have it happen or not have it happen, but be aware that it can happen. And as you seek your own inner reality, your outer reality may be growing, and this is going to be enhanced by the presence of Neptune making its way across your sun, moon, rising sign, and probably a good few other planets. All right, we're getting up on a little break here. We're going to do that. And I've got, this is a 2-minute piece of music. I may choose to cut it down, but let's see how it sounds at 2 minutes. And then I'll come back and I'll continue with the discussion of Aries and Chiron in the second house. It is a whole new topic, so that would be good to give it its own space. Here you go. This is by Jelko. Was one of the fugues by my musical collaborator, a guy named Jelko, Z-J-E-L-K-O. He goes just by that one name, and he's kind of an independent member of the Vision Quest musical ensemble, the official musical ensemble of Planet Waves. All right, so let's talk second house. For all of the intangibility and things gone missing and people gone missing of the 12th, the second answers that with possession, with being the literally the house of movable objects, things that you own, tools of the trade, how you feel about yourself. This is a crucial aspect of the second house, self-value. And self-value is the basis of decisions. I want to read to you the quote from A Course in Miracles that inspired the theme of this reading, which is partly based on the 12th and partly based on the second and partly based on Neptune squared the nodes. And I think this applies to all of them. And the whatever the voice was that came through Helen Schuckman channeling A Course in Miracles said, quote, "There is a deep responsibility that you owe yourself, and one you must learn to remember all the time. The lesson may seem hard at first, but you will learn to love it when you realize that it's true and is but a tribute to your power. You who have sought and found littleness, remember this. Every decision you make stems from what you think you are and represents the value that you put upon yourself. Believe that little can content you, and by limiting yourself, you will not be satisfied. For your function is not little, and it is only by finding your function and fulfilling it that you can escape from littleness." So littleness is the sense of being irrelevant or unimportant or not seen, not noticed, not appreciated, not valued, not loved. And it's also the sense of diminishing your own value. And we're taught to do this. We're taught to extinguish our curiosity. We're taught to extinguish our sense of influence in the world, even influence in our own affairs. And people who can be quite prominent and powerful in the world can have this deeply hollow sense of their value and their worth, which then creates all kinds of strange distortions in their lives. You are very fortunate to have Aries in the second place, because if nothing else, you have moxie. It's a brand of chewing gum, I think, and it became a word. Moxie being the like daring do, moxie being chutzpah. And that's what it means to have Aries in the second, because Aries fires up the universe. Aries is like, Alice Bailey calls it, the ignition key in the engine of the universe. It starts things. And it is prone to its own type of insecurity. I can say that for sure. However, at least it grants you initiative, and it grants you, I think, moreover, the essence of wherever Aries appears in the chart. It is, that is where you seek to find your true sense of meaning. And so with Aries in the second, you are going to be inclined to, be willing to seek actual self-value, to seek your sense of who you are as a focused life mission, as a purpose that you live, and in many ways that you cannot escape. The reminder with Aries being, the sign of beginnings and not necessarily of continuations is to make sure that you continue and develop your growth process. But that's much more likely with strong Pisces in the chart, because Pisces is the chart of endings. And so you want to get to the end. You begin, you kind of begin at the journey. I call Pisces the Delta of Venus, but it's both Delta and headwaters. And so, the journey of Pisces begins with Pisces. Then the next place it goes is Aries. And you're like, all right, who am I? What am I doing here? What is my worth? And I think it is so vital to recognize that the way you express all of this is through the choices that you make, and that the choices you make are based on your concept of who and what you are. And so that's the thing to work on. And fortunately, great fortune, Chiron is in your second house right now in Aries. Now, you've lived through a phase of Chiron in Pisces. That ends. It fades out in 2018, 2019, a very distinctive time in your life. Let's say that, I guess that goes from like, it's about 7 years. So it's going to be like 2011 through 2018, 19 is the Chiron in Pisces phase, probably check me on the early end of that, whether it's 11 or 12 or something like that. But you get the idea. From the early 20-teensies, it's really the 20-teensies, out to the end, almost the end of the decade. And then Chiron enters Aries. And then this can precipitate, in the style of Chiron, a self-esteem crisis, a self-worth crisis, or any kind of sequence of events that teach you the lessons of Chiron and Aries through the paradigm of your self-value. Now, I'm not a big fan of the term self-esteem. I think it's kind of a little almost awkward to take the concept of esteem and make it reflexive. And I more think of self-value as the way to describe this, right? The value you put upon yourself. And what Chiron is going to do is it's going to stir the pot on that whole question. There's going to be a kind of a provocation, and it's, you know, it's not always pretty, but if you stick with it, if you take the teaching of Chiron and you let Chiron perhaps cleanse the injury to your self-value, you will find that that injury heals and that you're able to grow. And the other bit about Chiron, wherever it shows up, is that it often acts as a shamanic initiatory wound. It's not a wound in the normal sense of a wound, like, you know, skinning your knee or, you know, but any injury at all can become a power wound, right? The result of some form of initiatory activity, a piercing, a circumcision, an ordeal, being left out in the forest for some days, or any metaphor of that. And Chiron's focusing this process, and it is going to, if you let it and you cooperate, take you on a kind of inventory of self-worth and self-value. And let this happen. If you are not so sure that you're a worthy person or whatever, ask the question. Really, really ask the question. In the kind of language of the Course in Miracles, get the lesson about this, because when it comes down to it, you are of infinite value, certainly to yourself, and you came here for a reason. You have a purpose for being on this planet and for doing what you're doing. And Chiron will help you understand that what is distinctly and only your own. Now, there's an interesting element associated with Chiron, which is a conjunction of a planet called Salacia. I have an article about Salacia. I'm going to make a note to add that. Salacia was the consort of Neptune from Roman mythology. She was a sea nymph. She didn't feel herself worthy of the great god Neptune. He sent a dolphin to kind of woo her. Imagine that. A dolphin comes and says, "Hey, the great god of waters and earthquakes loves you. Thinks you're the bomb, baby." And so she, joined him. And it is not a salacious story between Salacia and Neptune. I believe she was a virgin, right? So the concept of salacious is a kind of misappropriation of this. And I explained it in the Salacia article that I'll include for you. My take on Salacia is that it's about integrating sexual maturity. That's my delineation of Salacia. It is not a direct pickup on the mythology. It is just my observation from many years of delineating minor planets and working with the idea that personal development, self-actualization, and sexual evolution often enhance one another. And that one of the easiest ways to limit self-growth and self-actualization and to hinder self-worth is to hinder one's sense of one's sexuality. And it is possible to find oneself through this, to recognize that part of your beauty and your value in the world is your sexuality. And further, I would add one other thing that I think is, you know, worth writing on the wall, along with all those D words, is that many people's self-esteem has been injured by some sexual episode in the past that made them feel worthless, and that is directly connected with a sense of feeling worthless and with, repeated injuries in relationships and these kinds of difficulties. And I think that it is sad and tragic that the whole topic of sexual growth and sexual maturity and the value of sexuality has essentially been, relegated to a kind of porno and sin, and ew, can't talk about that. And it makes me uncomfortable. But the reality is you do have a sexuality and you do have a sexual history and things have happened to you. And so to my thinking, the conjunction of Chiron and Salacia is saying, okay, while we're doing all this self-actualization and self-worth work, let's check out the sexual injuries that have happened in the past, and let's figure out what those are about. Let's get a grip on that. And it is not a fast process. No Chiron process is, but borrowing an old expression, I think it goes, well begun is halfway done. So if you initiate this process, this is all very much initiatory. If you initiate this process, you will find that it pays immediate dividends and that it is worth confronting the discomfort factor and the what I would describe as rampant social pressure to think about sex as anything other than sex, which is usually done by politicizing it or turning it into some kind of a moral issue. And so I suggest that you get away from the moral issue, the politicization, and all the social pressure and street marches and all these concepts of what, you know, sex is some kind of a, it's in American society generally evaded as being nothing more than a political statement. And the feminists of the 1970s, did this quite well, Red Stockings with its expression, the personal is political, and so forth. But they were not friendly to sexual growth and sexual evolution. Betty Dodson, by the way, of that era, was the feminist who brought sexuality to the feminists, first in San Francisco, then in New York. She was like the personal ambassador from sex and was treated with great misgiving at the beginning, and then was cheered on and is, I think, is the most legitimate of the second wave feminists, because she really understood that feminism it has to be about your relationship to your body, which leads me to another point. A lot of the damage done to self-esteem and self-value and the sense of one's presence in the world has been the consequence of this complete digital tidal wave that has consumed reality and turned it into so-called reality. And we are all living under the thrall of digital. We tend to live much of our lives online. We meet people online. We have relationships online. We order our food online. We do all of our banking online. And everything is, being toted around in this digital device we call a smartphone. But one of the effects that this has had, and I think this astrology has very much been centered in Aries, and this is historically true as well, with activity at the dawn of the radio era, for example, the dawn of the printing press, for example, has involved a lot of very powerful Aries astrology. And what Chiron and Salacia in Aries are doing is urging a reclaiming of your incarnate, carnal, physical I am-ness. And this has to be complete, has to involve sexuality. And if you are brave enough and curious enough, the crucial thing is curiosity. I think curiosity is the most important sexual emotion. You can really fuel and facilitate your growth and your healing because you're willing to recognize in yourself all the things that you need to recognize. And it's not just shadow, but a lot of shadow is contained in the way that we as a society shove sexuality under the rug and shove it into the 12th house. That's really the under the rug placement. Now, the Aries astrology, the Chiron-Salacia conjunction, does something that, let's see if I can explain it in a way that brings it back around to this. So one of the really wild things that's been going on in your chart going back to around 2017 is that 2017 in one way and then 2008 in another way is that Capricorn has been one of the most active signs in the sky, and you have Capricorn as your 11th place. The public, your personal public, the people in the world that you know, how you are known, your reputation in the world, your model of social existence. And by the way, you know, with Capricorn on the 11th, Pisces likes a little more formal approach to social existence. You might feel good at a formal ball or at a true community square dance where everyone knows the dances and everyone knows who the caller is and knows what to do. You like a little formality and structure around your friendships, and you like to dress well when you go out, and you're a little old fashioned and you want to keep your friends for a long time. Well, this has all been demolished by first Pluto going through Capricorn and then Saturn going through and Jupiter going through, and one planet after the next has just shaken up this sense of the formal structure of society that we need. I mean, we need this, and the internet has largely been the thing responsible for this. What's going on now that Jupiter's left and Saturn's left and Pluto is about to leave, Pluto's done most of what it's going to do, and Capricorn is kind of cooling off a little bit, but there is the presence of two of the more important discoveries of minor planets, Quasar and Pholus. They're in exact conjunction right now. Let's see if I've got my chart for the March horoscope here. I just did this chart last night, and I'm here. The chart for March 13th has Quasar and Pholus in an exact conjunction. And the thing about these is that they are about family patterns. They're both about family history, tribal history, and the origins of not only the family's problems, but the tribe itself. And so what is happening now is that for you, society is in the process of rearranging itself in some reflection of your concept of the family that you want. And many of the damaging planets, like the Saturn-Pluto conjunction, which happened in January and was, you know, gets the, like, mischief maker of the Millennium Award, that's gone. But now there are these deep healing impulses of Pholus, very similar to Chiron, Pholus, and Quasar, which are saying, work the world as the family of humanity. This counts for whatever world you want to think of. It can be your immediate circle of friends and anything ever widening to the totality of the world we live in, because this is an essential piece of your spiritual path, and ultimately it comes back to Chiron Salacia, how you feel about your own sexuality. Let's take a little break. Thank you. So, just to clarify, the term all comes back to, you know, you're either going to feel good about who you are, and that percolates through your whole being, or not. And if you don't make up your mind about how you feel about being in a physical body with all the feelings that a physical body has, then someone else is going to make up your mind for you. And you, this is your thing. This is your life is your choice. And, you know, every decision you make stems from what you think you are. And that counts for relational and sexual decisions as well. Perhaps above all else. So let's go around the chart, and I'm just going to kind of catch up on a few of the, let's say, seemingly smaller points, but really they're not. I think I've covered most of the big ones, but there's some details. So I want to give you some of those and talk about the new moon for a moment, which is kind of the central chart of the Pisces season. Uranus in the third, Mars in the fourth, and Vesta in the seventh. And I think we've got a complete picture. So the new moon is conjunct Venus conjunct Neptune. This is a very idealistic new moon, and at the same time, it's easy to have it disappear due to the Neptune factor. And so what Venus is saying is make it physical. Bring this into physical reality. And if you try to bring things into physical reality and you notice that something is stopping you, or that you can't quite get your hand into the glove of physicality, yeah, find out what that's about and work your way in. And resolve what's interfering with your ability to be in your skin. And of course, this is a very imaginal chart. There's a patently clairvoyant chart, and beautifully so. It's artistic, it's inspired, and you just want to keep translating that into physicality. And I know there's a big shift in the density level when we go from, you know, Venus conjunct Neptune, this rather etheric and beautiful aspect, into the grounded physicality of a Moon-Sun conjunction. Okay, on the outer planet patrol, Uranus is still, I consider Uranus to be still newly in Taurus. It's been about 2018 to 19 to 20. So looking 2.5 years, not even two and a half. Coming on 3 years of Uranus in Taurus, and this is your third house. So speaking of physical, this is some interesting tension because the third is a mental space. Taurus, though, is interestingly very mental sign. It's physical, but the you might call it the Taurus paradox is Taurians tend to spend a lot of time, as they would say, in their heads, and it almost seems as if the physicality of Taurus is to assist with grounding the in one's head thing. Uranus placed there is explosive and revolutionary. And what this is suggesting is that you are a vessel of new ideas. And that is a beautiful thing for you. And there's also a revolution taking place around your relationship to your physical existence, that the revolution is Uranus and the physicality is Taurus, and the how you think about it, your concept of your reality is the third house. And so this is happening. You know, you may know that I'm an advocate of encouraging people to write. I think that it's one of the most grounding skills to have right now, and the reason that it is such a grounding skill is that to really write is to commit yourself to being understood. And this is daunting for many people because, first of all, it involves committing to that which you want to be understood, and then that might come along with, oh my God, can I change that, and so on. And you've got Taurus there, which means, you know, you might be inclined to keep the thought pattern the same, but with Uranus, it's not going to happen. And so you're very much experiencing this from the inside out revolution, which is making you just want to do things your own way and go your own way and be your own person. And if you can document this, that would be very wholesome for you and help you with the process of incarnation. And you can think of, like, maybe say reincarnation from the discarnation the de-physicalization of this whole digital existence that we're being kind of overwhelmed by in some very toxic ways, not appropriate to talk about here. I do talk about them on my program, but all of this, to sum it up, essentially making people do and believe and think things that they would never normally do and think or believe, they might be inclined to question, and then to make questioning into a form of treason, merely questioning things that affect your life directly is ridiculous. And you are in a very good position to ask questions. You are in a great position to be the one to shake your own tree and by extension shake the tree of the people around you. And as long as you're asking questions and as long as you're willing to accept as true things you were not expecting, you're on solid ground. You're in good shape. Okay. Throughout your birthday season, Mars is in the fourth house. The fourth house is the house associated with security and safety. The fourth house is the house associated with your sense of grounding. It can represent the physical home and estate. It can represent important elements of your lineage. And you have Gemini here. Poet Adrian Rich once wrote an essay called Split at the Root. I think she was half Jewish and wrote an essay commenting on, you know, what that's about. And Pisces on the fourth is very much about being split at the root. And I would encourage you to look at the ways in which your life is a reconciliation of that element of being split at the root. Additionally, this Gemini fourth is about having another place to go. I've long touted this for Pisces. During many of those years, I did have a second place to go. I had an art studio, one place or another continually for a number of years, and that felt really good. And I don't have that anymore, and I really miss that. And I'm trying to figure out how exactly to reinvent that in an affordable way, and, you know, but still having that other place to go and to be is vitally important for you. A second place to call home. Mars moving through this angle is a little itchy and scratchy. When does it actually arrive? It's not going to be there through the whole Pisces season. I'm looking at so many charts for different time frames that I can get a little bit confused. Events, position, Mars enters Gemini. Okay, so that's on 3-3, that Mars enters Gemini. Now, here's the thing about that. First of all, the itchy, scratchy part can be insecurity and little bits of panic and little bits of hostility. But the thing to remember, like in your environment, but the thing to remember about Mars and Gemini right now is it is slowly going to approach a square to Neptune. And that is Neptune in your sign. And so this is about the continual questioning of your reality, particularly from the viewpoint of what makes you feel safe. Don't take that for granted. Don't assume you know the answer to that. Well, if I have a boyfriend, I'll feel safe. Well, if I have my own house, I'll feel safe. Well, if I'm living on the third floor, I'll feel safe. Those things might help in some way, but I would not take for granted that you know what provides you with a sense of security and confidence and belonging. And that may be something completely different from what you think that it is. So the thing to do in times like this is to keep the question open, to have the courage to keep the question open long enough to kind of, you know, establish a relationship with the possibilities and to establish a relationship with the unknown. Okay, so could say a lot more about that. One last point, though, is Mars moves through your fourth. It is going to make a square to a centaur called Nessus. And it's going to do that while we're here. And the exact day doesn't count so much from the standpoint of reading the chart as a solar return chart. Though it's still interesting to know the date when this happens. Mars square Nessus. So that's way at the end of March. It's approaching all the way through, but be mindful that this aspect is developing. And this is the potential for you to have past injuries, abuse injuries, sexual injuries, trust injuries of all kinds triggered, and remember that it's not something from the outside that is triggering you. That's the important thing to remember. It is a square. It is Mars in the fourth square Nessus in your sign. And if you stick with this, there is a real breakthrough happening. I'm looking at this chart for 3/26/21. It is a spectacular chart with a grand cross. It's like Moon Vesta, which we're going to come to in a second. Opposite Nessus, and then Mars on the North Node, and then the South Node making the final point of the square. There is real resolution in this at the moment of a Sun-Venus conjunction in your second. This is one of those charts for the ages. So keep at it. And if you feel unsafe, probe why you feel unsafe. Rather than just assuming you understand or assuming that it's the appearance of the circumstance, right? What it looks like, who that person is, what the seeming circumstance or situation is, go deeper than that. The square to Nessus is going to take you as deep as you want to go. And then remember that blaming blaming is not going to help the process, but it is good to call out what you know to be true. Say, that person hurt me, that experience shook my confidence in myself, and then you aspire to new experiences and you do something different. You have what Hakomi therapy calls a missing experience. Vesta's prominent in your charts right now, and that's important because it's in your seventh house. And so the tension between sexual and non-sexual in relationships is a very important question this year. And what you do with the people that you love and admire who may feel attracted to, but who don't reciprocate that by being attracted to you. That's a very important question of what to do with this, and how you handle it is going to provide you with a lot of growth and like evolutionary fodder. Last thought, Pisces is soon to be the home of Jupiter, the classical ruler of Pisces, which means we're heading for a Jupiter Neptune conjunction. The classical and modern rulers of Pisces are about to make a conjunction, but moreover, Jupiter is coming to Pisces. And it's going to be in Pisces. Well, it arrives on May 13th. This is only good news. Then Jupiter retrogrades back into Aquarius on July 28th. So it's like much of the spring and the first half of summer, Jupiter is going to be in your sign. Take advantage of this. This is something you need and deserve and have waited for a long, long time. Jupiter then retrogrades back and re-enters Pisces at the end of the year on December 28th. And then it stays in Pisces till May 10th, 2022. So it's dancing back and forth over the calendar years. I've seen it practically follow the calendar years. Now it's kind of splitting the difference. So I think as useful as Jupiter in the 12th is, you're really going to appreciate Jupiter in your first and second houses. It's going to be good for your sense of belonging in the world. It's going to be good financially. It will help you feel attractive and therefore able to attract the things that you need, the things that you want, the things that you believe in. And so therefore, you know, take the effort to learn how to feel good about yourself. This is a skill that is often not called a skill. Many people don't believe that this is actually possible, and I assure you that it's possible, and it is, if you truly set out to do this, it's almost inevitable, but it is, there is a challenge. It does not happen itself. You have to work the territory, and that is not always easy, because you'll come up against some of these obstacles, and you come up against obstacles of the world. And we don't really know what's happening with the world. And by the way, I mean, you are very sensitive to the conditions of the world. And the events of 2020 were very hard on you. You felt you were in the first row for that. You might have been on the stage or backstage, but at minimum, you were in the first row looking at this. And, you know, whatever your belief framework is, which I would again encourage you to challenge your belief framework and assume that anything you think you know may be wrong. That's a safe assumption, right? Assumptions make an ASS and so on. But to hold the assumption that you might be wrong is a very wholesome place to be, because it's gonna allow in some of the unknown that you might otherwise filter out. And so you felt the shock of this earthquake, and it has dealt you a trauma. And what you do with that trauma is your own material. You know, that's for you to do. But you definitely, I think, need to process this, and the way most of the world is processing this horrible thing that has happened, and whether it was planned or whether it is simply being exploited, in the end, the effect is the same. You know, good things are happening for bad people, and bad things are happening for good people, and we need to take care of ourselves and take care of each other and make sure that we claim what is ours as free and sovereign citizens of the world, and that you make the decision for yourself about what it means to take care of the people around you and your community, and that you not be guilted in to accepting or believing what you know might harm you, what you suspect might harm you, or what you know might potentially harm you. And I realize that it can be revolutionary to even ask questions, but hey, you are blessed with Uranus in the third house. You are blessed with the gift of being able to question your reality and what previously seemed solid and predictable and traditional and necessary and all that stuff. Well, it ain't what it used to be, and it is your privilege to use your precious mind to ask the questions that affect your reality. And if you are feeling weighed down by all of this, or angry or frustrated, do a reality check and see if maybe you will feel better if you are bolder and more courageous about asking the questions that need to be asked, and use the information that you come up with to guide yourself. But as far as something being a seemingly revolutionary thought, when you're worried that this is going to shake your foundations, you know you're thinking the right thing. When you're worried that no one's going to accept this, or when you have an idea that no one else is going to accept, that's when you know that you're actually starting to make sense for yourself in terms of using your mental tools, which are quite advanced, to deconstruct the nature of your reality, which is your reality. The world you live in is your world. And you have a right to understand it, and you have a right to be part of this world, of your world, and you have a right to know the truth about your world, but the truth is not, finding the truth is in no way a passive act. It is a courageous, self-assertive, gutsy, beautiful thing to do, and ultimately to do that, it is essential to stop worrying about what other people think or might think, and it's essential to stop believing what other people believe merely because they believe it. I'm going to end with a poem. This is the Pisces reading, after all. It is my reading for myself. Autobiographical note 12 of 88. What can I say about all the minutes of those days, the miles of those journeys, the states of mind, and the games of solitaire? Fast abandoning tabs on the lost and the retrieved as time thunders, laughing across the threshold of the years. I had tumbled back into some new gape of the ancient dream, deceived and believing I was deceived, desiring for the prison of want, searching for some gender between the oppressed and the oppressor, and then streamed with a great perk of bile from the labyrinth that was never there. You have come close to truth, and only this stands between you and the bridge that leads you to it. I opened my eyes. My rib was returned Hope is a hard love to part for the hopeful. Then met with the vision of this precipitous beginning, a child in my arms, tame and wild cats and dogs all around me. Now, said the voice, step out lightly. But I could not see the crossing. Vision can deceive. And so I learned to listen, basking as I am in the light of the invisible sun. All right, Pisces. Sent to you with all good love. Happy birthday, and bye for now.